Hello, fellow movie fans. I'm Lily Percy, and I'll be your guide this week as I talk with the New York Times chief film critic, A.O. Scott. The movie that changed him is Ratatouille, and don't worry if you haven't seen it, we're going to give you all of the details to follow along. But if you have, get ready to relive this Pixar classic. But before we get started, a special shout out to our Minneapolis friends. We're doing a live recording of This Movie Changed Me with artist, activist, and Minneapolis City Council member, Andrea Jenkins. We'll be at the Parkway Theater on Sunday, September 29th, talking about Spike Lee's masterpiece, Malcolm X. You can get your tickets at theparkwaytheater.com and use the promo code MOVIEFRIENDS to get 20% off. The first time that I saw Ratatouille, I couldn't get over the fact that I was seeing a rat cooking in a kitchen. It's something that, you know, if you've ever lived in New York City or any major city in the U.S., Minneapolis included, where I currently live, you fear rats. And yet there is something so delightful and extraordinary about watching this rat create his masterpieces.
You're not gonna like it.
What have you got there?
You found cheese? And not just any cheese, tome de chèvre de paix! That would go beautifully with my mushroom! And oh, this rosemary, with, maybe with a few drops from this sweet grass!
Well, throw it on the pile, I guess, and then we'll, you know.
We don't want to throw this in with the garbage! This is special.
But we're supposed to return to the colony before sundown, or, you know, Dad's gonna...
Emil! There are possibilities unexplored here. We gotta cook this! Now, exactly how we cook this is the real question. Ooh, yeah! The key is to keep turning it.
Hey, Remy, you think that maybe we shouldn't be so...
Oh, you gotta taste this!
The main rat in Ratatouille is Remy, and he's voiced by the comedian Patton Oswalt, who also loves food, so watching him explore Remy's creations is especially lovely. Remy wants to be a chef in the tradition of the great French chef Gusteau, and he realizes the only way that he can accomplish this is by working in Gusteau's kitchen in Paris.
Paris? All this time I've been underneath Paris? It's beautiful.
The most beautiful.
Gusteau's? Your restaurant? You've led me to your restaurant!
It seems as though I have. Yes, there it is! I have led you to it!
I gotta see this.
So Remy infiltrates the kitchen. He goes in and starts to observe all the other chefs that are working in there and starts to pick up tricks of the trade. And then also starts to correct certain recipes that are being created in that, ultimately changing the way that the food tastes in the restaurant.
What did the customer say?
It was not a customer. It was a critic.
Ego?
Soline Leclerc.
Leclerc? What did she say?
She likes the soup.
Wait. What do you mean, wait? You're the reason I'm in this mess.
Someone's asking about your soup.
What are you playing at?
Am I still fired?
You can't fire him.
What?
Leclerc likes it, yeah? She made a point of telling you so. If she write a review to that effect and find out you fired the cook responsible...
He's a garbage boy.
Who made something she liked. How can we claim to represent the name of Gusteau if we don't uphold his most cherished belief?
And what belief is that, Mademoiselle Tatou?
Anyone can cook.
One person who starts to notice the changing food in the restaurant that Remy is cooking at is the food critic Anton Ego. It's a very appropriate name because he believes that he knows the best food when he tastes it. He believes he knows how to tell everyone else about the best food, and he can really close down a restaurant just based on his reviews alone.
You are Monsieur Linguine.
Oh, hello.
Pardon me for interrupting your premature celebration. but I thought it only fair to give you a sporting chance as you are new to this game.
Game?
Yes, and you've been playing without an opponent, which is, as you may have guessed, against the rules.
You're Anton Ego.
You're slow for someone in the fast lane.
And you're thin for someone who likes food.
I don't like food. I love it. If I don't love it, I don't swallow. I will return tomorrow night with high expectations. Pray you don't disappoint me.
One of the things that Anton Ego realizes in Ratatouille is that it's become harder and harder for him to find food that he loves, food that moves him. But he's still hoping and searching, and that relationship between critic and creator, between Anton Ego and Remy, is something that really resonated with movie critic A.O. Scott when he first saw Ratatouille. And it ultimately ended up changing the way that he approached his work. Well, I'd like to take you back in time for a minute by asking you to close your eyes. It's like a meditative exercise.
Okay.
And for 10 seconds, I want you to think about the first time that you saw Ratatouille and think about where you were and how it made you feel. And then once the 10 seconds are up, I will chime back in. So what memories came up for you just then?
I mean, it's funny because I saw it for the first time in my capacity as a reviewer for the New York Times. So it was at an all-media screening, which is basically a sneak preview where they have some of the rows taped off for the press. And right from the beginning, it's just, which I think is often true of the better Pixar movies, you're just in this world, in this imaginary world that even before you know what's going on in it or what the story's going to be, has a kind of clarity and makes sense in a way.
Mm.
And it was really only toward the end of the movie that I began to really sort of get excited about it on an intellectual level, because I thought this movie is about art and creativity and criticism. It's a movie that, in the guise of being about a rat who learns to cook, is kind of about all of the things that I care about and mm-hmm. am interested in and is going very deep into the reason that I do what I do.
I know I'm supposed to hate humans, but there's something about them. They don't just survive, they discover, they create. I mean, just look at what they do with food.
How can I describe it? Good food is like music you can taste. Color you can smell. There is excellence all around you. You need only be aware to stop and savor it.
Oh, Gusteau was right. Oh, yeah. Oh, amazing. Each flavor was totally unique. But combine one flavor with another, and something new was created.
I mean, I love the fact that there's the critic whose name is Anton, which is a version of my own name, you know, Anthony, Anton, Antoine, Tony. And
then Ego.
Well, you know, no shortage
the last
of
name.
That.
Exactly.
in this profession. But who is set up in the movie to be misunderstood. And one of the things, I mean, not to get too self-pitying or dramatic about it, but critics often feel misunderstood. There's
yeah.
often a feeling that what we do and what we're trying to do is just not really, not only not appreciated, but also just kind of fundamentally not, people just don't get it. People say, you know, what are you doing? Why are you trying to ruin everybody's fun? And there's the, why don't you like food, they say. They say to Anton Ego. Because it
exactly.
seems that he doesn't. He's holding things to these impossibly high standards. Everyone else wants to go out and have a good time, as people do at the movies. And here you are finding fault and passing judgment and taking the wrong things too seriously in the wrong way. And I think that the movie ends up being an appreciation and a defense of what ego does, what criticism is, why it's important to the arts and to artists in a way that I hadn't come across, certainly in any other movie. I mean, when there are critics in movies, they usually are buffoons or villains.
Yes.
Or just kind of like bad guys. And you could understand why filmmakers who've had their own experiences with critics would
lash out,
to see
yeah.
us that way. Yeah.
What is it, Ambrister?
Gusto's.
Finally closing, is it?
No.
More financial trouble?
No, it's...
Announced a new line of microwave egg rolls. What? What? Spit it out.
It's come back. It's popular.
I haven't reviewed Gusto's in years.
No, sir.
My last review condemned it to the tourist trade.
Yes, sir.
I said, Gusto has finally found his rightful place in history right alongside another equally famous chef, Monsieur Boyardee.
Touché.
That is where I left it. That was my last word. The last word.
Yes.
Then tell me, Ambrister, how could it be popular?
You write about it so beautifully in your book, Better Living Through Criticism. You write about Ratatouille, and actually you shared this wonderful reflection on Anton Ego. You describe him as someone who approaches food with rigor and reverence more likely to bring him pain than pleasure. And you also quote a scene from the movie where an innocent diner asks him, as you write, "Don't you like food?" And Anton Ego says, "No, I love food." And you talk about the emphasis on that word love. You say that it evokes a religious devotion rather than romantic longing, erotic pleasure, and that love, which exists on an ideal, platonic plane, produces a steady diet of disappointment in the actual secular world of ordinary eating. And I think what you're getting at there is this thing that is misunderstood about critics, which is that it's because you love what you're talking about so much that you take it so seriously. And I wonder if at that point in your career when you saw this movie and you saw Anton Ego, if it changed your approach to your own work in any way.
I think that it did, and it was one of the reasons that I went on to write that book.
Which is
kind of an attempt to defend and explore and define and just to understand what criticism is. Not necessarily what the job of a professional critic is, but where the activity of criticism comes from. Because we all judge, we all compare, we all analyze, we all interpret. We take these experiences that we have that are meaningful and powerful to us but often very confusing and mysterious and try to hold them up to some scrutiny, try to initiate a conversation about them or try to just figure out how we feel about them. And what I thought about with Ratatouille was that in suggesting that the origins of criticism for Ego are love. And then later on, in that amazing flashback scene, discovering the origins of that love.
Where he's transported back in time, right? Because of the ratatouille that Remy makes him.
Exactly. Remy makes him this ratatouille. And it's one of those great little Pixar short films within the film where you discover, and this is a kind of a magical thing that happens that Remy didn't even necessarily know. He made the food, which is the kind of the primal comfort food of Anton Ego. And so all of this longing, emotion, memory, childhood experiences, the sensation of, you know, falling off his bike and skinning his knee and then being comforted by like stewed eggplant and zucchini, which is kind of an interesting thing to give your child, but whatever. That's France. The art, that is to say, Remy's cooking, awakened those feelings in him. And then his job was to give some expression to that experience in a way that wasn't personal, that wasn't revealing that experience. He doesn't do what some critics nowadays might do, which is write tell the story of his mother's ratatouille.
Yeah, his own personal connection to it.
Right. But he puts that in there. He puts that into the review. And, of course, then he gets fired from his job because it's this is a meal cooked by vermin and the place gets shut down. And,
literally a staff of rats are cooking the food.
Yes. So, but it did really get me thinking about the relationship between artists and critics, because I think it's a fascinating one between Remy and Ego in that movie, and what they are to each other and how critics serve the cause of art. So it certainly did affect the way I thought about it. I mean, I don't think I can't say it directly changed my practice as a critic, but it did, I think, affect my attitude toward what I do and, in a way, my theory of it.
In many ways, the work of a critic is easy. We risk very little, yet enjoy a position over those who offer up their work and their selves to our judgment. We thrive on negative criticism, which is fun to write and to read. But the bitter truth we critics must face is that in the grand scheme of things, the average piece of junk is probably more meaningful than our criticism designating it so. But there are times when a critic truly risks something, and that is in the discovery and defense of the new. The world is often unkind to new talent, new creations. The new needs friends. Last night I experienced something new. An extraordinary meal from a singularly unexpected source. To say that both the meal and its maker have challenged my preconceptions about fine cooking is a gross understatement. They have rocked me to my core. In the past, I have made no secret of my disdain for Chef Gusteau's famous motto, "Anyone can cook," but I realize only now do I truly understand what he meant. Not everyone can become a great artist, but a great artist can come from anywhere. It is difficult to imagine more humble origins than those of the genius now cooking at Gusteau's, who is, in this critic's opinion, nothing less than the finest chef in France. I will be returning to Gusto soon, hungry for more.
As we've been hearing A.O. Scott affirm, movies change lives, and we want to know how they've changed yours. Subscribe to our newsletter, and we'll send you our weekly reflection question, along with instructions on how to share a voice recording of your response with us. This week's question is, what movie inspired you in your career? As an added bonus for subscribing to our newsletter, we'll also enter you in a drawing to receive your very own copy of Ratatouille. Visit onbeing.org/TMCM letter and subscribe today. You know, it's so fascinating to me. You were saying, you know, often in movies, critics are portrayed as villains, and I have to say, when I first saw this movie, I didn't see Ego as a villain, but I definitely didn't really see him as a sympathetic character. But he really is the core of Ratatouille in so many ways, Anton Ego. I mean, that beautiful line that you quoted in your New York Times review of the movie, you know, not everyone can be a great artist, but a great artist can come from anywhere. I mean, it's just, it is so central to the kind of understanding and joy of the movie, and it comes in this form of a character that, on the surface, is supposed to be unlikable.
Yeah, and I think he seems, because he's very forbidden. I mean, the way that Peter O'Toole does the voice, the way that he's drawn almost as a kind of vampire figure.
He
lives in this dark coffin-shaped apartment, and I think
he looks
you're
like
sort
someone
of,
who never eats, by the way,
right? Who never eats and never smiles, and is just completely sour, but he is the person in the movie who explains and in a way vindicates Remy. This idea that Ego is, I mean, he has very high standards, but he's free from snobbery. That is, he needs everything he eats to prove itself on its own terms. So he's not thinking about, well, what is the reputation of this restaurant? Because Gusteau's, of course, is coasting on its reputation and serving pretty lousy food. And the customers who keep going in and eating this lousy food are in a way seduced by this reputation and are missing what's really going on and have maybe lost sight of the of the real possibilities of quality and innovation and creativity that still exists in cooking. And it's ego's job, it's the critic's job to kind of be the radar that detects those things.
Yeah.
And I kind of take that to mean anything that comes along that is exciting, challenging, that fulfills some of the possibilities of creativity, of human or, for that matter, of rodent creativity. The job of critics is to discover that and to be able to make a case for it for the public.
Is Linguini's dish done yet?
Yeah, it's as bad as we remember. Just went out.
Did you taste it?
Yeah, of course. Before he changed it.
Good. What? How could he change it?
He changed it as it was going out the door.
They love it.
Well, Sir Dino's already asking about it. About Linguini. I have 7 more orders.
That's wonderful.
You know, I love the way when you talk about ratatouille, the kind of danger that can happen as a critic in becoming cynical as you get older. Mm-hmm. You know, and it really strikes me in that kind of last line, the line that Anton Ego says after he's been transported back in time to his childhood, after he's bitten into the ratatouille, where he says, "I can't remember the last time I asked a waiter to give my compliments to the chef." I mean, he's gotten to a point where he's so jaded, right, and so cynical,
yes,
that even being able to recognize this love in the work is hard. And I just wonder, you know, as your role as a critic, but also as a human being, you know, how this mm-hmm. movie has continued to change for you as you've gotten older and you've watched it more often.
Well, I think I'm glad you bring up that line, because I think that that's a very important one, which is that whether you're talking about food or about movies, you're talking about inevitably about commercial products. You know, you're mm-hmm. talking about things that are bought and sold and produced for profit. And that's certainly true. Pixar is part of the Walt Disney Corporation, which is, you know, growing by the minute.
Yeah.
But when you're a critic, it's important to be aware of that, you know, and to keep an eye out for the compromises. And this is something that Skinner, the true villain of the movie, the mm-hmm. guy who's taken over Gusteau's restaurant, is certainly represents, which is the corruption of art. Because, you know, Skinner knows that there's a brand, that there's the Gusteau brand, and that people are going to buy it, whatever's in it, so that he can kind of water down or sacrifice the creativity in the art. And that happens a lot in movies, I don't need to tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of movies where you see, you know, how commercial imperatives keep a lid on creativity and artistry that you're looking for. So, but you have to keep yourself alert to it and not give up on it. And what I often hope is that if I reach a point where I can't find the new or give up on finding it, that I'll have the good sense to step away. Because I think that is a betrayal of the ethic of criticism if you decide that all of the good work, all of the important work, all of the new is old, is in the past, is not in front of you. Then I think actually criticism can become harmful and can become stultifying.
And then you lose the love you had for it, right? The love that you had for the work.
Right. Or it's only nostalgic. You know, it's only, well, you know, movies were great. Because everyone...
yeah, this is when they were great.
Right, this one time period, which always coincides, almost always coincides with like the late teens and early 20s.
Yep.
You know,
no
which
coincidence.
Of course, because yeah. you were young, you were going on dates, you know, there was...
You were finding out who you were.
You were finding out who you were. Everything was new to you. You had strong and passionate opinions. And, you know, of course, everything was... The world was made for you in a way, and then you kind of get into middle age and beyond, and the world isn't for you in the same way, but you don't need to blame the world for that. And I think the great role model for me among critics, and not only for me, for a great many film critics, is Roger Ebert in that
yeah.
regard, because he was always... looking ahead. He was always excited when he walked into the screening room and the lights went down. He always had the hope or the expectation of seeing something that he hadn't seen before. And he kept that kind of faith right up to the end. So that, to me, is the great example of how to keep the critical spirit, which is a spirit of openness and of love, alive in yourself.
Les rêves des amoureux.
sont comme le bon vin.
A.O. Scott teaches film criticism at Wesleyan University, and he's also a chief film critic for The New York Times. His book is called Better Living Through Criticism. Walt Disney Pictures and the Pixar Animation Studios produced Ratatouille, and the clips you heard in this episode are credited entirely to them. The movie's soundtrack is off of Walt Disney Records and composed by Michael Giacchino, the man behind the music for Up, Coco, and The Incredibles. Next time on This Movie Changed Me, we'll be talking about the Marvel gem, Black Panther. You've got a week to watch it before our next conversation, and lucky for us, it's currently streaming on Netflix. Prepare yourself, Wakanda is calling. The team behind This Movie Changed Me is
Maya Tarrell,
Chris Hegel,
Tony Liu,
Kristen Lin,
and Lillian Vo.
This podcast is produced by On Being Studios, which is located on Dakota land. We also produce other podcasts you might enjoy, like On Being with Krista Tippett and Becoming Wise. Find those wherever you like to listen or visit us at onbeing.org to find out more. I'm Lily Percy, and I'm going to go make the food that reminds me of home. Arepas with poached eggs and a side of avocados. And lime juice on top, of course.
This podcast is produced by On Being Studios in Minneapolis, Minnesota.